The opinions expressed in the following program are those of the producer and not necessarily those of WKTV Community Media.
We hear things in the deep, dark night. We see things in the shadows, in the corners of our eyes. In mind and dim light, we sense things. They just aren't right. Our dealings are not with human flesh and bone, but rather with an essence that defies even the basic laws of nature, like space and time. These elusive cells challenge our logical minds, forcing us to take faith in the unseen, the unsubstantiated. We cling to theory, statistical inevitability, and the imminent manifestation of mystery. Brought to you by WKTV, I'm one of your ghost hosts, Wayne Preston Curtis Thomas. Welcome to a special episode of Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters Paranormal Podcast. As always, we ask that you please keep an open mind about things that you might not easily believe as we explore the mysterious. We have a very mysterious guest tonight, but before we meet him, please welcome to the show my co-host and also producer of the show, Brandon Jose.
Hey, everybody. Brandon Jose of Jose History Productions YouTube channel. It's spelled H-O-E-Z-E-E. You can find the Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters podcast on there as well as any of the other podcast sites.
And are you presently with GRASP
Paranormal? Yes. Yep.
So you're doing some ghost hunting with GRASP Paranormal?
A little bit.
and some Bigfooting too?
I haven't done that in a while, but I do plan on doing that again in the future.
Okay.
I had some car issues, so I wasn't able to get up there this last fall, but so hoping to this fall.
We are ghost hunters, but we've kind of branched off a little bit. I am a member of MUFON, and so I'm especially interested in what our guest is going to have to talk about tonight. He's an author, he's a radio and TV host, he's a Vietnam vet, he's a UFO expert and experiencer, and I think he's a guitar player in a rock and roll band, maybe, and author of this book, and we're going to talk about this book tonight, and that is They, What Do They Want? Please welcome to the show, he's soon to be a legend, if not already, Dave Emmons.
Thank you so much for that intro, and I appreciate that poem that was on first. That's great. It's really talks about what life is really about in the mysteries of life. I was the guitar player and a drummer for 45 years. I played music. Started off playing like Jimi Hendrix stuff back in the 70s, and a Vietnam veteran, of course, and that's where, you know, I've got, you know, some of the, my mind was very creative, and the consciousness that what you asked a while ago, that people have to kind of accept what they don't really know and try to pull it in and get some understanding for themselves. That's what I've done all my life. I've been very open-minded, and my consciousness, and which is the key word in seeing just about everything with your third eye. And it's something that you get used to, and sometimes you get boosted from it, from having an experience with ETs and being abducted with implants and things of that nature, and I've had all that. And you talk about ghosts, and you talk about ghosts earlier, and I mentioned to you guys about, you know, tell me the difference between an ET, dimensional being, a ghost, poltergeist, and an angel. And most people can't really tell you. There's not much of a difference because they're coming from another dimension. They're traveling from dimensions. I sound like the Twilight Zone here now, but they travel through dimensions and they have no time or distance that they can't travel or be here within a blink of an eye. And that's how they show up. And that's how ghosts show up. That's how ETs show up, through portals. They come through their own little portals and they're drawn in. You see them for a bit. And same thing with ETs. You see the craft for a while, And sometimes you might get a chance to see them for several minutes, like I had a chance to see a couple of different ships for several minutes, and you get a good look at them, but that's kind of like a shock and awe. They always catch you when you don't have a camera. Of course, cell phones weren't around too much when I saw most of my 6 up-close UFOs, and I've ran into 3 actual ET beings face-to-face. And this is something that showed me that there's another side to life. And the more you know, actually, the less you know what the answers really are.
Ah, that's what you said in your interview on The Daily Show.
Yeah.
That exact quote. That's an Einstein, a quote from Einstein.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we had Bill Konkoleski, who's our Michigan MUFON director, and he said something very similar when I asked him a question. I'm always trying to pin him down on stuff about aliens and that. And he said about the same thing. You know, you skipped over your bio a little bit because you do a show, the Dave Emmons Show, and it's, is it Strange?
Strange Reality.
Strange Reality.
Yeah,
how often do you do that?
Well, I'm doing it, I do it twice a week. I was with another network, Spirit Realm, but they had a lot of production problems and they had their servers go out and everything. So they're trying to put back together. I don't know if I'll go back to them or not, but I couldn't risk having, the production problems on the show because that would make people I'd lose my viewers.
Right.
I wanted to be consistent. So I went back to doing my own shows twice a week. I just finished with Earl Gray, who's the Southern California MUFON director, great guy, a lot of great stories, and about his mother, actually. And I was really shocked when he said he'd talk about his mother. I said, okay, we can talk about that for a couple of minutes. Go ahead. But he actually was telling me about her history, that she worked for Howard Hughes, if you know who that is.
Right.
Yep.
Are you old enough to know who that is?
Yeah.
I know who he is. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, she worked for him. She was a right-hand secretary to him, and she actually did a lot of the social functions in which he was a germaphobe. So he didn't get out a lot. But she went to an underground facility about a mile deep, and this was back in 1953. And she said it was like a small city underneath. It had a barbershop, a cafe. It had a bar. It had everything down below. And she mentioned that there are ETs. And she apparently saw him, but she was under top secret, security clearance, so she couldn't talk much. That's what Earl was saying. Fantastic story, but yeah, I was in top secret myself in the military, and I got out of that because I didn't like it. I didn't like military intelligence people talking to me every week, asking me weird questions. I was only 19 when I went in. I had high test scores, and that's how I got in with that elite class. It was in Redstone Arsenal back in 1969, and I didn't care for it. I got out of it. They said we was going to go to Sandia and be underground, and I said, that's it for me. So yeah. I had
were
to get
you
a post-
were you in Vietnam then?
Yes. I was a combat platoon sergeant in Vietnam.
Well, thank you for your service.
Thank you. I was field promoted to lieutenant, but I didn't stay in. I wanted to take my 3 years and go. I didn't want to go back to Vietnam.
Now, I think most viewers probably aren't old enough to understand the lottery was not a good thing back then, because the lottery meant you could be drafted.
But yeah, let me tell you what, there was corruption back then. I can tell you a story, and this is in my second book, Senseless Wars and Conflicts, Combat Veterans Perspective. That was in my second book after They. And I can show them and hold them up, I guess.
Yeah, I was hoping you would. Yeah, you'd have those.
Yeah. This is the Senseless Wars book.
Yep. Nice.
And this, yeah, I talk about the corruption.
I love that cover, Dave.
This is They, What Do They Want? It was done by Hangar One, great guys. And they also, they just released my third book, and it's this. Angels and Supernatural Entities, and that's also by Hangar One, and that was just released 2 weeks ago. I haven't even gotten a word on how that's moving, but as a writer, you're always concerned about how the books are going to move, so you'll know what direction to go with your next book. I'm doing a sci-fi right now, my fourth book, almost done with it. It's about an ET and a human relationship. And this is actually spawned from ideas that I got from they and my real experiences. This book is actually put together with combat, and that's Senseless War, is put together by they, ETs, and also the angels and of God and entities. That's another thing, reason I put this all together in this sci-fi book. And I'm, like I said, I'm almost done with it. The battle scenes are pretty hard to put together. You're up against a lot of competition on Spielberg and all these other movies, but I'm just trying to get the skeletal parts of it done. But that's what I'm doing. And I'm also doing the radio. Like you said, I do that twice a week. I've been with a couple of different networks. I've actually been doing hosting for about 4 years now, and I've done guest appearances way before that. But my UFO, and we was talking about ghosts a while ago. Yes, I've been on ghost hunts. I have a couple of buddies who write ghost books. Larry Wilson, I don't know if you know him, from Illinois.
No.
He's a great, he's boots on the ground investigator. He works very hard to get a lot of his effects and things, his sound effects, and also pictures. Great guy, and we talk to each other a lot. We've been to meetings together, and he actually is the one who pushed me into writing. And one of the people who inspired me to start writing. So I did. I didn't think I was going to start writing. I look at these three books on my coffee table and I say, wow, I did that? Gee whiz, I didn't think I'd ever be a writer. I knew radio was in my, because I went to radio school. I had 5 years of college in mass communication. So I knew radio was in and out of my life throughout my life until I got better jobs that had better benefits. So I went for that. But my life actually started, it was back in 1962, actually, when I first saw my first UFO. I was outside playing. And my brothers and sisters were all in the house for some reason watching TV, and I didn't care to be watching it. And I was sitting outside looking up at the moon. All of a sudden, to my right, I saw this craft. It was about 50 feet up, maybe. It's hard to guess. And it was kind of, it's rectangular. And at the bottom of it, it kind of looked like a barge, if you know what a barge, a river barge kind of looks like. It's a little smaller, and it had bright lights on the front. And underneath it, it was glowing bluish light. I couldn't figure out what that was. And I thought, oh, my God, should I be afraid? Because my mom always told me, stay away from those flying saucers. Back then, they had this flying saucer scare. And she would tell us, don't get near a flying saucer. Don't just run when you see one. Well, apparently, I didn't. And so I sat there. But I don't remember what happened after that. I must have went out or something. And then all of a sudden, I found myself in bed, and I had to share a bed with my brother. I had 10 brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
And we weren't the richest of people either. So we had to have fun with a cardboard box, and that was it. So, but I got in the bed, and my legs were numb, and I felt somebody was standing next to me. And my brother, I shook him. I woke him. I said, do you see anybody? And he said, no, go to bed. And then this thing left, and my legs start coming back to themselves. And I thought, I told my brother, I said, I think I saw a UFO and an alien monster, you know. And so he said, oh, you're full of crap, you know. And that's what a lot of kids will tell you when you go to school and talk about it. But then a year later, this is kind of like a synchronicity thing. I knew they were following me then. My buddy and I, and we still talk about it. Matter of fact, I'm going to his 50th anniversary next week. And we talk about this sighting that we've had that really opened up things for me and really made me believe in the first one I saw. And then the second one, I thought, okay, there's something to this. Well, we were sitting on the steps. He lived downstairs in an apartment with his dad. And we were sitting on the steps drinking Pepsi from a glass bottle, and that'll date me. And we had a 10 transistor radio playing music, and we was listening to it and just talking like young boys would. We were 13 and 14. I was 14, and we saw these lights coming across the tops of the treetops, and then we smelled something. We thought it smelled like sulfur, or gunpowder, because we were familiar with gunpowder and sulfur. We weren't familiar with ozone back then, and which I found out later on, that's an ozone smell. When you have carbon, carbon dioxide and you have oxygen, nitrogen, all mixing together and kind of getting hot, it'll actually smell a little bit like sulfur, but it's not sulfur, it's ozone. So we got up and he said, let's go up on the street and get a flashlight. And my buddy said, so we went up to his dad's truck, got a flashlight. We walked on the street parallel to this thing moving real slow over the tops of the treetops. And it was in between two rows of houses. So there's a lot of backyard there. So we followed him up and he was taking a flashlight and flashing at it. And he said, oh, it's flashing back. And I looked a little closer and it was actually the lights kind of bouncing off the leaves at the top of the tree coming in and out. And that's what I told him later on. I said, no, that it wasn't talking to us. It was actually, bouncing off the treetop leaves. So we followed up and got into this empty lot, and this empty lot overlooked my backyard. I was only about 20 feet away from my backyard, like down a little hillside. And we stopped and we looked at this thing. It looked like one of these Nazi old, I guess, flying saucers that they created back in the day. And it was like a little toy top looking thing, like you wind up with a little screw. And it had three layers. The first layer was kind of bulbous, and the second layer was more flat and smooth, but it had the windows in it. It had the portals in it that we were looking at. And we could see shadows moving around. And on top, it just had a 5-foot like round top on it, and it had two antennae sticking off the top and a red light on top of it. I noticed that. I was wondering why the antennae, because I always thought, aliens communicated telepathically and they had other electronic ways of communicating, because I watched a lot of movies back then, Invasion of Mars from Mars and also When the World Stood Still. All these movies us kids used to watch, and we used to think, okay, that's what the UFOs and ETs are alike, but that's not really true. So as we were standing there, this ship was only about 60, 70 feet off the ground. And as we were just standing there, we pinched each other and we were talking. And we said, you see what I see? I said, yes, I see it. I said, I'm afraid to look at the windows. I'm afraid of seeing an ET or back then, I said alien. And we just stood there, and all of a sudden it just seemed like the world stopped. And we ended up standing in that yard again, and we looked at each other and said, and then the ship took off. My buddy didn't see it take off, but I did. It took off due west, and I drew a picture of it later of the location and everything. It was coming to us from the southwest, and that's where it paused and stopped. But when it took off due west. So apparently it must have moved some 30, 40 degrees while we didn't pay any attention to it. We thought it was sitting in the same place all the time. But when it took off real fast to the west. And we said, oh, wow, we're going to go home and tell our parents about this one. The ship was about 30, 35 feet wide in diameter, and it was probably about 22 feet tall, 24 feet tall, somewhere in there, and with the three layers and the windows. And so we said, yeah, I'm going to go home and tell my mom. And he said, I'm going to go home and tell my dad. So the next day we told each other this story. This is what happened. When he went home, told his dad said, yes, son, okay, go to sleep. You saw a flying saucer. So he just kind of ignored him. But when I got home, my mom had the doors locked up. And normally she don't lock them up because she thinks maybe I was going to stay all night at my friend's house. And so she locked up the house. It must have been really late. This actually started around 10 o'clock, 10:20 p.m. is when we first saw the UFO. And then this must have been close to midnight. I wish my mom would have told me what time it was, because when I knocked on the door, she was mad. She said, where have you been all this time? You know how late it is? I said, no, mom, I don't know. We saw a flying saucer. And then she said, I'll fly and saucer your butt and I'll get in the house. And little did I know, she knew quite a bit about flying saucers. Well, her and her family has actually seen them themselves. And that's why she kept telling us, stay away from these flying saucers, because she knows her and her family has seen them and they know they're real. I didn't know that until later on in life. And then she started telling me these stories about her family and about her episodes in her own house. So it does follow bloodlines. It does follow families. And that's affirmative on that fact. It's because my other brothers have also seen flying saucers, and they've had these nights where they've been paralyzed and they don't really realize what happened. There's the old hag syndrome. In which they say the old hag sits on your chest. That's an old way of talking about being numb all over. But it's actually you're being abducted, probably. A lot of people are abducted. They don't even know it, 50% of people. And read Dr. David Jacobs. He says that they walk amongst us. And I've actually met some. So it's like I said earlier, the more you know, the less you know what the truth really is. And that's a coined phrase from almost everybody who really experiences something out of the ordinary. But they know we're not alone. We are definitely not alone.
Dave. And,
yes.
You talked about the dumbed down. Is that what you're referring to now? Because all through the book, you refer to being dumbed down.
Yes. Yes. That's a magnetic energy that hits you. And actually it goes through. They can actually start early. And I've heard Earl was talking about that. Earl Gray,
right.
You know, from Southern California. He was talking about his abductees and himself. He was an experiencer. And he hit some pieces of the puzzle that I'm familiar with. What happens is when they want to take control of you, they make you tired. The one time I got really tired was sitting in my office. It was about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It was sun was shining. I was on the computer, probably making notes on my UFO and ET stuff. And this was back in 2011. And I felt really tired. The reason why I'm telling this story is I'm telling these stories out of sequence or out of a calendar date. So, you know, I'm not going by the dates now. I'm just telling the stories.
Right. The book kind of goes from early right on. And I love your titles, because it's like chapter one is like your first experience seeing a UFO. Chapter two, second experience seeing a UFO. Mm-hmm. And and you can look at the title of the chapters and know exactly what they're going to be about. I love that part of it. And the detail, I'm thinking, how does this guy have so much recall on the detail? And then finally, I saw something in your book about a ledger. Apparently you kept journals.
Yes, I've got a journal. When I wrote the book, I had about 290 typewritten pages of journals that I kept. And I went back and remembered. I have a good memory. My brother keeps asking me, how do you remember all these details?
Right.
I can remember things about my childhood. I can remember the color shirts that I wore back when I was only 5, 6 years old. I can remember what I did and how I played and how I thought. And actually, sometimes I like being alone and looking up at the stars. And I knew then my mind was a traveling mind. It kind of seeked out things. So that's the way I was. I guess I was calling these visitors to me. They say contactees, not abductees. These contactees are ones that the ETs come to. And you can actually relate this with ghosts. Okay, if you go into... I've been on ghost hunts too. I want to get into your backyard also.
Right. Well, your show covers a lot of things.
Yes, I cover everything.
Otherworldly, ghosts, psychics, whatever. Yeah. I like that. People should know that you're not just UFOs on your show.
No. Matter of fact, I have Mark Olley, who's going to come on. He talks about ancient history. He talks about Merlin. And a great guy. He's a musician also. And him and I hit it off really well. He's from UK, London. Very smart guy. He's written 9 books. He's got a band that's made 2 or 3 CDs. And he's still playing. He's in his early 60s. He'll be on my show Tuesday.
Oh, okay.
Next Thursday, I have a guy named Robert Broek. Broek or something like that. Van Den. He was very famous and popular back in 2011, 2012. And I think he's in Sweden or Switzerland. I'll have to find that out. I'm getting his notes and stuff now, but he's going to be on my show next Thursday. He's going to be talking about ghosts. He's going to be talking about dimensional entities. So he'll be covering a lot of ground also. So I cover giants' bones, ancient biblical history, and that's why I wrote this third book, Angels and Supernatural Entities. I actually talk about ghosts in that book. And the way the Bible talks about the ghost, Jesus, there's a couple of stories. I'll just some of the highlights of the book, and then I'll go back to the UFOs.
Yeah, okay, sure.
So much to cover here. But we were talking about ghosts. In the Bible, when Jesus come back from the dead and he's resurrected. He come back and he met his disciples. And there was, most of them were there. I don't know how many were there. I know there's biblical quotes in my book because I have to be correct about this because people will check me on my biblical quotes. So, but I don't have my notes ready for me here, and this is a short show and we're covering two different books. But he come up to Thomas, and so that's why they call him Doubting Thomas. He come up to Thomas, and he looks at his disciples, and he looks at Thomas. He said, you seem like you're seeing a ghost. It's me. It's Jesus. You know, he said, feel my hand and look at my hand. So Doubting Thomas touched his hand, and he touched the wound in his hand. Of course, we know the wound was in the wrist, not really in the palm. That's what scientists are saying. But they looked at him and they said, oh, you're real. He said, yes, I'm real. I'm back in the flesh. So this is, you know, something. And then the Bible, I guess several chapters down, it says, it talks about ghosts, that Jesus actually made a mishap, or he kind of said the wrong thing when he said ghost, because Jesus didn't talk about ghosts. He talked about spirits. He said that spirits will hang around 3 days after a body dies. They make sure that the body's dead and then they leave. So that's why I told people, said, if you cremate me, give me 3 days.
Yeah, I've heard that same thing about the 3 days. So there's something in there about zombies too in that 3-day period that can happen.
Right. It's the fungus or the virus, whatever. But but Jesus, you know, on the third day, he rose again. And there's the secret. Third day, the spirit will come back in you if you're not really dead. So there's a lot of things about Jesus. Also, Jesus was mentioned as being a shapeshifter. It's in the book of the dead, and also it's in another book of life, it's called, or something, from ancient Egypt. And they found it about 1,200 years ago. They dug up this book. And this book actually said that Jesus was in Egypt. You know, he was there. And I know he was there. I heard a lot of, you know, his travels took him there. So he was there. And they said that in this book, they described Jesus as a shapeshifter. And when he was turned in by Judah, I guess the high priest and their army that they had, their little private army that they had, they said, how do we know Jesus if he shapeshifts? We don't know what he's going to look like. And Judah said, that's why I'm going to go up and kiss him. The guy that I kiss, that's going to be Jesus. And they said, how does he shapeshift? And he says, we don't know, but he can turn tall, blonde hair, blue eyes. He can have shorter hair. He can have darker complexion. He can be a shorter person. And they said he can change all the time. He said, a lot of times we can't keep up with him. Now, this was kind of like mentioned in the Bible also when he went to a mountain. It was a small mountain. Don't forget the name of it. But he took three of his disciples, James, and I think it was John, and then his brother James, the three of them or something. And they stood there and they watched him. He raised his arms up. And he turned completely in a bright white light. He was a white, bright white entity. And that's what I'm saying a lot of people are going to be, you know, a little miffed at me. I don't want to say the word, but they're going to, because I think Jesus was an extraterrestrial. Because look, you had two angels that actually, you know, inseminated Mary.
How about the Egyptians? You think they were aliens or hybrids or something?
Well, there's a story about Osiris and his wife, which was actually his sister, and then there was a guy named Seth that was his brother. I guess this story stuck out to me because it sounded extraterrestrial, and it was a story of Seth who didn't like his brother Osiris. He thought he should have been king instead of him. And so Isis, his wife, that was his sister actually. Isis was really smart, they said, and a lot of women liked her. She talked to the women about having babies, and she was a nurturing person, and she was tall, and she could have been an ET herself. They could have been the lizard people, as they call them, reptilian. But what happened was Seth took Osiris kind of poison him and then cut his body up in pieces and spread it all over Egypt. So I guess how the story goes, he was all chopped up because he didn't want him to be put back together. Now, what does that tell you? Could this be biomechanical type of Osiris? And Seth, his brother, knew this and took him apart and put him all over Egypt. And his wife, had to fly around. She turned into a crow and she flew around and she found the pieces and put him all back together. Now there is a magician named Tooth. I think they call him Tooth. And he must have been some kind of a brainiac or some kind of an ET, because he helped, he helped his wife, Osiris's wife, his sister, whatever. That's what they're saying. I'm not quite sure about it. That I didn't research that too much. But it's this Isis. What she did is she asked his Tooth, "Let's put him back together." So they put him back together, and then he was back to life. And he actually produced an offspring with Isis, and that offspring become a king later on in life. And that's kind of a story that I thought was kind of weird. It was one of the most weird stories with the Egyptian people. But if you look at the Egyptian people, they actually did have a religion. They did have morals. You can compare the archangels that we have to their gods, little gods. Little G-O-D-S, and they have gods for each one of the archangels. I got a list in the book. And so they were actually on to the biblical principles way before the Christians got a hold of it. They had the 12 commandments, and the Christians had 10 commandments. And this was something like, I'd say 1,200 years before, 1,400 years before Christianity come about. So the Egyptians were pretty advanced, and they weren't the torturous, mean people that we keep thinking that they were warlike. Yeah, they were warlike. They fought wars, but they were very a very organized, religious type of a people, and that's where the Christianity was. They kind of copied that.
Yeah, they seemed to be advanced in other ways too.
Right,
but. I saw your interview you did. You did an interview on Our Daily Show, and you said you were talking about angels, because that's when you talked about your book, Angels and Supernatural Entities. You said that you've seen Lady in White, which is which is famous in the ghost hunting area too.
Yes, it is. Yeah, I can tell you, when I saw it in 71, when I come back from the war, and I stayed at my parents' house for a little while before I got an apartment. And I woke up about 3 o'clock, bewitching time. You guys know that too, as ghost hunters. 3 o'clock is usually bewitching hour.
Right.
I woke up, and I guess you could put this, I could have put this in my ET book, but I didn't. So I went ahead and saved it for the angel book, because I took this as an angel, like, I guess. And I woke up automatically, like something just woke me up. I looked, and there, standing at the foot of my bed, was a lady about 5'7", and she had this robe on, white robe, and she had a veil on, so I couldn't see her face. She stood there for about 5 seconds or more, just staring at me, and I was staring at her, and I was wondering, who is this, or what is this? And then she slowly walked away, and when she did, she walked across the hall and walked into my mom's room. So I followed her, and I asked my mom, said, "Did you see anybody or anything?" She goes, "No." She said, "What'd you see?" I said, "I saw a white angel or a ghost." I said both, so I didn't know. I was confused at that time, and I'm still confused now.
Sure.
My mom said, "No, I didn't see her. She didn't, I wasn't woke up from it." But then that comes at a time when I come back from combat. Of course, you're kind of nervous and you're kind of jumpy. And so you need some help coming back to yourself. And I thought I took that more of an angel visit than I did anything else. I don't know about the ghost hunters. I know you got stories of the angel. The woman in white, and I want to hear that too. But in 99, after my divorce, I was going through some times and some changing times. And at the foot of my bed again, one night, I woke up automatically. I looked and I saw this tall, white, 5'7" tall woman with a white robe and a veil. And she was there, standing there, looking at me again. I can see the reflection actually in my dresser mirror. And I said, wow, I see a reflection this time. And she was standing there for the same amount of time, turned around very slowly, walked out and walked into my bathroom. And I jumped out of bed and followed her in there. She was gone. And so I really don't know what she was. Like I said at the beginning of the show, we don't have the answers. And if somebody, you know, argues with you and say, well, I got the answer, I know what it's all about. No, we don't. We don't. It's the things that I've seen only that means that it has a gut feeling to me. This had a gut feeling of healing. This was kind of like an angelic visit. Now, how you guys tell me what some of the stories about the woman in white robe. Tell me some ghostly.
Well, the lady in white shows up in cemeteries and haunted roads. I mean, all through of a.
Yeah, there's a lot of different reports, a lot of different legends. But again, it might be, you know, a lot of different spirits. It's like a lot of times, like, well, like one of the big stories is like a few different cemeteries where it's like, you know, there's like, it's like Resurrection Mary, I think in Chicago. And it's like, she'll like hitchhike for a ride and then get dropped off at the cemetery and then like walk in and disappear kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm. A lot of your stories, Dave, I could have related to ghosts because what you say, you hear noises and like there's nothing there. And cold spots, that's also associated with ghosts. You know, we measure for cold spots.
Yeah, so do I. I have a device for that. The frozen idea is a little different for me. I think that's what you're referring to.
Yeah, yours was different than, yeah, because yeah. You couldn't measure any coldness, but yet you felt like you're freezing.
Yeah, this happened 6 years in a row. From 2016 to 2021 or 22, somewhere in there. And it happened between August 11th and August 14th. For some reason, it happened, and it only happened out of sequence once in a January. That's because they come and visited me, and they already, I guess, already took whatever they wanted. But I'll tell you how it starts off. I'm in bed. My wife, she could hear my cell phone fall off the nightstand and hit the carpet. This night, she didn't hear or feel nothing. And I'm a big guy, and I was shaking the bed, really. I mean, I was so frozen. I felt my arms, and I was frozen. And I was shaking. The bed was just vibrating. And she didn't wake up. I looked over, and my mind wasn't thinking anyway. They turned my mind off. They took my energy. They took my soul. They took my consciousness, and they took it on a ride into another dimension and left my body there with very little energy to keep it going or, you know, keep it warm. So I got out of the bed, went to the bathroom, nothing in my mind, not a thing. I wasn't even thinking about waking up my wife. I wasn't thinking about saying anything. I couldn't talk. I was just empty. My mind was just empty. I crawled back in bed, and then I covered up blankets, and I was out. I was so exhausted. So apparently something really exhausted me. I told my doctor about this, and she's an excellent doctor, one of the best doctors I ever had. And she said, well, maybe it was kind of cool at night. I said, no, this is August. It's not cool.
Yeah.
And then I said, and then she said, well, maybe you had the air conditioner on you. I said, no, got central air. And I said, I was covered up with actually a bedspread and a sheet, and I was fairly warm, actually. And I said, that's when I got frozen. And she said, how many times this happened? I said, 6 times. On the same date, just about August 11th through 14th, she looked at her assistant and she looked at me. Her eyes got wide and she says, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
That's beyond me. And I said, I know. I said, if I could figure it out, I would too. But this happened like 6 times. And it was beyond the ghost thing. It was kind of like something taking
me to another. Yeah, that's different because we could measure. Brandon and I have been able to measure. I would carry a thermometer or 2 thermometers, and we could measure the difference in the cold spots. But you couldn't measure anything. You know,
no.
In your book, it said, it's too wild to be made up and too real to be denied.
And, right.
And in the beginning of the book, I was like, you're talking about different things. And I'm thinking, why isn't this guy recording this stuff? Why isn't he having stuff while he's sleeping? All this stuff's happening while you're sleeping. But then as I got into the book more, you did have motion sensors, cameras on you.
I've got pictures.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And pictures. So many pictures, you can't even put them in the book.
No, right. That's right. The pictures I put in there were the craft, what the craft looked like, and actually what some of the aliens looked like. And I actually put a picture of a real person, a real alien, Hiroko. She's in the book. She was the one I met in Sedona. It's one of the biggest stories I think I've been through, except for it all happened within a day or so. I can tell you the story real quick. I traveled out to Arizona quite a bit. I was traveling, taking pictures. I got into photography. Of course, when you're a musician, you get off into all kinds of stuff. You know, if you're not playing music, you're going to be messing with something else that's kind of artsy, fartsy, whatever. But I was taking pictures of out west. I went out there and I rested for, I drove about 23 straight hours. I'm a 48-hour driver a lot of times. And I rested for 2 hours. And I felt good. I got up, went to this gift shop, and the gift shop told me at the Cathedral Rock they just saw a UFO there last night. And I said, oh, great. So I said, I know where it's at. So I drove up there. I was there before, the year before I was there. And then I started taking pictures of my Sony cam. It was kind of cool at night, kind of cloudy. And while I was taking, you know, film of the mount there, a little white car pulled in behind me. We were the only two in that parking lot. Because Sedona is not really pretty if it's kind of sprinkling and it's kind of cool and cloudy. So I saw out of the corner of my eye, this gal gets out of the car. She's about 5'5". She was Asian, actually, Japanese. And she looked like to be in her early 30s. And she walked up to me with her hands folded across each other. And I looked at her and I said, are you going to go hiking? She goes, no. I said, do you have somebody that you know, you're waiting for? She goes, no. She said, I'm here to see you. I said, what? Yeah. She said, we were supposed to meet. And guess what title that is? That's going to be a title.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't want to put that out too much.
Okay,
shouldn't.
Cool.
But, that's where I'm saying this sci-fi book relates to what actually happened to me. So I asked her, I got a little film of her while she was standing there, and I told her I was looking for UFOs, and she just kind of looked at me kind of weird, and it started sprinkling. I said, you want to get in the car and chat? And she goes, sure. And so she got in the car and said, you're not afraid of a big old bruiser like me? She goes, no. I said, you can kick my butt then, huh? She goes, yes. Very, very confidently, yes. And I thought, oh my. And I knew that there were some red flags popping, and next to me, just a car parking space over from me, there was a young guy, close cropped hair, and he had a headset on. He didn't look at me. And I found that in dimensional entities, they didn't look at me. And I find it in the alphabet boys that they don't look at you because they don't want to show their face. They're there just standing there or sitting there, and they got their headset on. They're not going to look at you. They're going to just observe your sound. They was actually monitoring her. This guy was probably, no doubt, NSA, okay? They put that out there because I was hacked about a few months later after that. My computer was hacked by somebody very governmental. But we were sitting there, and I looked at her, and I said, do you know him? She goes, no. And I said, okay. And he takes off. And while he's gone, she was talking about her folks in Japan, Tokyo, where she said she lived. And she said they treated her mean, and her boyfriend treats her mean, and she was crying. And when she's crying, I put my hand on top of her hand, and I said, it'll be okay. You can go ahead and cry. You tell me the story. It's fine. And her hand was so burning hot. I mean, it was above fever pitch. I took my hand off her hand. I said, are you okay? I said, you got a little flimsy sweater, and she had denims on that had a big mud mark on them. And she had no earrings, no makeup, no purse, no cell phone, nothing, just plain. That, you know, I thought that was kind of weird for, you know, for a lady like that. And she said that she couldn't read English, but she could speak it. And she knows 20 languages, she told me. I said, wow, that's fantastic. And then she said she went by herself to White Sands, New Mexico, the missile base there. And I said, why'd you go there? A woman by yourself. She said, I just wanted to see the sand. And I thought, that's a strange answer. I asked her how old she was. And then this car beside me, this NSA guy, he pulls up again. He pulled up three times within about an hour and a half to make a short, you know, long story short. And the second time he pulled up, I had a license to carry a gun. And I had a gun in my console. I looked at my console and she looked at me and she had eyes that just pierced me. They were dark black eyes and they just pierced me. And I said, Hiroko, don't do that. I said, you're burning the back of my head up. And so she just sat there and I left the gun alone. She knew what was in that console. She could read my mind. And then I asked her how old she was. And then she actually went off on me. She says, there is no age. There is no time. Why do you people keep talking about age and time? There is none. I said, wow, that's a big red flag. You know,
yeah,
I
thought, there is no time in the universe.
Yeah. Right. So I knew there's something wrong there. And so I told her, I said, well, it's getting late, 9:30 or so. Let's get back to our rooms. I said, let's meet for breakfast tomorrow. And she said, sure. And I said, I'll be at that 101 omelet place in Sedona. Anybody knows Sedona knows that place. But we took off. And she took off really fast. I mean, she was almost flying, how fast she drove. Amazing. And so I went back to my room. The next morning, I went to that cafe. And she was a little late, but I knew she was going to show up. Something telepathically, she was talking to me. She said, I'll be there. She was about 10 minutes late or so. She pulled in. And I asked her, I said, did you check out of your room? Because she was leaving that afternoon. She said to go to L.A., and I said, oh, really? And so I said, did you check in? She goes, what do you mean check out? She said, what do you mean check out? I said, if you use the credit card, I said, they'll probably bill you for the next day if you didn't check out. And she goes, oh, okay. And I dialed up the number of the lodges she was at, and she talked to somebody there, and he said, okay, it's okay, you're checked out. I think she had a caretaker because we ran into an older Japanese guy that day. It was called Airport Mountain and Lookout. And we was up there and this older Japanese guy walked past us that day after breakfast. But at breakfast, we were waiting in a line there was a little gift shop. People were kind of just walking around. And she says, all these people, and there's only about 12 people there. And I said, all these people, I said, doesn't Tokyo have about 1,000 people per square block?
Yeah.
I said, you should be used to that. She kind of looked at me funny. We went in to eat and I picked what she didn't know what to order. So I ordered for, but she ate very little. And when we were done, she went to the bathroom. And I think she probably regurgitated that food because that's not the kind of food she's used to. She probably drinks this blue liquid or whatever. But so we went out touring around and I prayed she wanted to have a baby. She wanted to get married and her boyfriend to get back together. And so I prayed for her there. And we went to another restaurant just to grab a bite before she had to jump on in her rented a car and then take off to the airport in Phoenix. We were at this restaurant and I ordered for us both. And she kept staring at me. And I said, Hiroko, I don't know who you are. Who are you? She goes, you know me. I said, no, I don't. She said, I know you. I said, I know you do. Some reason or another, you know me. And she looks at me with those glowing glassy eyes and she said, I like you. I said, I like you too, but who are you really? And she would never say. She just kept being mysterious. She never let out a word about anything about ETs or anything. But to jump real quick to the next part of the story, it's in the book. My cousin and I were sitting on my front porch smoking a cigar, in which I quit some time ago, people. But we were smoking a cigar, and we saw these three, he said, Chinese. I said, no. I told my cousin, no, they're not Chinese, they're Japanese. He said, do you know them? I said, I think I know the woman is with them. They were about 250 feet away, so I couldn't really see her face too well. And the two young guys were about 16 and 15, and they were kind of tall and had a bony structure to the face, and which wasn't common to the Japanese Asian race. But the woman turned around, and I knew it was Hiroko. She turned around so I couldn't see her face. She had the same clothes on, the same white thin sweater and the denims, blue jeans. And the two young guys were dressed like mod style. They were dressed like typical teenagers. They walked up to us and they stood about 10 feet from us. And they asked me, says, where's the nearest Walmart here? Is it? And I said, it's just right over that overpass. That was the last words I could speak. I couldn't say no more. I was dumbed down. That's the true meaning of dumbed down. They hit us with some kind of magnetic energy. And my cousin, who talks a mile a minute, matter of fact, he can kind of be kind of rude when he meets people, but he didn't say nothing to them. I looked over at him. His eyes were glassy, and he was looking down at the floor. I said, oh, my God. And all I could do was move my eyes and look around. These two had the same beady black eyes that their mother had. I call it their mother because she was with them. That's probably her sons. Could have been part of me also because I've had semen taken from me in earlier parts in the book. It tells about I've seen, you know, they come in there and they put this tube to my groin area, and I know what it was, and I just passed out. But I thought that they were part of me. Genetically, right. They were of me, and that's why they come to see me. And one of them was a little nervous, and I kept watching them with my eyes. I couldn't say anything. I wanted so hard to say, is that Hiroko? They knew I wanted to say that. They was reading my mind. And then one of them walked past me, the tall one, the older one. I didn't even know he walked past me. He went into my office. He grabbed this little pleather, I call it pleather bag. I keep my notes in it and everything. And he was reaching into it, and he looked at me kind of weird. And he pulled out some paperwork and he looked at it. And those were notes on his mom. I think he took those notes because I didn't find about three pages of those notes in my folder when I went back, and I thought about it the next day. Wow, he had that folder. I looked at it, and those notes were gone. And I kind of laughed because I made copies of them, hard copies, and then I put them in my computer. So no information was lost. So they were standing there, and he must have put the folder back, and I didn't see him go past me. And they were standing there looking at us, and they finally started walking away. My cousin didn't know they were away from us until there's about 50, 60 feet away, but I noticed them as they hit about 20, 30 feet away from me, hit the end of my driveway. And I saw him started walking towards Hiroko. And my cousin kind of come to, and he says, where are they at? And I said, they're right there. And he said, how long did you see him? I said, just about 5 seconds before you did. And he said, where are they going? I said, I don't know. I said, let's watch him. He looks at me, he said, are these ETs? And I said, for a skeptic, I mean, I always said that my cousin was shallow as a dry creek bed, I used to say. And when it comes to skepticism and everything, he was very skeptic, but he actually looked at me, he said, were these ETs? I said, what made you feel that way? He said, because I couldn't talk. And I said, yeah, I know. And I said, let's watch them. They walked up, got together, walked up to the stop sign, and we kept watching them. And right before our eyes, or they must have dumbed us down maybe a few seconds, they were gone in a flash. They didn't go down the highway. They didn't go up the highway because we had about 180 degree view, and we could see everything that was going on in that direction. And he said, he got up, my cousin did. He was pale white. He was saying a few cuss words, and he said, these ETs are going to kill you one of these days, Dave. He said, you need to quit messing with them. He said, I'm out of here. He said, this is crazy. He gets in his truck. He takes off. His wife asked me, what did you do to your cousin? I said, I did nothing to him. I said, the ETs did. And yeah. She just looked at me kind of funny.
You know, you're giving away a lot of your secrets, almost word for word out of the book. But I want to talk about fear. This is a good time because you brought it up. This guy was afraid. And I feel for your wife. A lot of the people that come on this show, their spouses are like collateral damage. Their significant others have to go through this stuff, and including your wife. I got some direct quotes, things that you said in the book, talking about fear. At one point, you said, why me? And then your fear level increased. At a different time, you yelled out, help me, God.
Yes, twice.
Yeah. And then your wife referred to them as your ET buddies.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And your wife asked if they would hurt us.
Yes. And she doesn't want them here in the house.
Yeah. And your answer to her was, They won't hurt us, honey.
No.
Now, I'm asking the same question here because I'm kind of wondering about that. And then later you said, but nothing stops them.
No, it's true because my brother said that he smoked his house for ghosts. And I said, well, you might be able to tell a ghost or a spirit to get out of your house.
Right.
Because you can actually do that with your own mind and say, I want you out and gone. And smoking is just a cherry on top of a nice cake.
Yeah, we can sage. I do that. I bless and sage people if they want that, to try to get the ghosts or evil spirits, right, negative energy out of their house. But yeah, with aliens, I just don't know. You said there's just no stopping them.
Oh, you cannot stop ETs. They'll do what they want to do. They're in control. They're millions of years, thousands of years, or a million years ahead of us. So they know exactly how to handle us. They made us, actually.
Of course, the biggest question you ask in the book is the title. And you ask that also during the book. You say, what do they want? And you give different answers. You mentioned, yes, they want your DNA. They came to you several times for DNA, for semen, right, and they also collect eggs,
right,
to create hybrids. Mm-hmm. One of the things you said, well, possibility, take over the planet, eat us, that we're food for them, is one of the possibilities. Track us is something that you mentioned. But I think the biggest reason and the best message in your book is, what do they want? They want humans to be more intelligent and be a peaceful race.
Yes. If we were more peaceful and more consciousness, they would come down and reveal themselves. We're really not ready for it. There's stories out that the Pentagon, half of the people in the Pentagon who make the decisions, half of them want to disclose, the other half don't. So there's a push and pull. But then I heard the ETs are telling the military, and which is four races that work with the military, and I think I'm being hit and bugged by some of these people, by both sides. They are telling the military that we're not really ready.
Right. And that's the message that I'm getting from other people. You know, we had Sev talk on, and she also was abducted several times all through her life. And she's saying the same thing. We're not ready, and they just want us to be more peaceful. But we need to move on because we're running out of time.
There is something that I did just kind of struck my interest. Is, so you're telling the story, like they were asking, where is Walmart?
Yeah.
Because people always joke about Walmart, the Walmartians.
Oh, really?
As a joke, because a lot of times Walmart, there's a lot of odd people there. It's like, now I kind of wonder.
Yeah. but maybe it was something that they were reading from my mind.
Oh, yeah.
They could actually read your mind and tell you.
Yeah.
It was like an abduction happened to me in 2011, right after this Heroku event. This was in October 2010 when I ran into Heroku in Sedona. And this was March 17th when my cousin and I was dumbed down. And they probably stuck us with some implants because I had an implant in my leg. And my cousin said he started hearing the hum sound the next day. So the hum kind of comes along with it. For some reason, there's a connection there for me. And that's during that time. But the abduction that I had, that I said, oh, God, help me, is I got tired, just like I was telling earlier. I was in the computer room. I went and laid down, and I was still awake because I had my hand, oh, you know, my cupped with my chin in it. And I was looking out the door, and it was a sunny day. And then all of a sudden, I hear this crackling, popping sound in behind me. It sounded like stepping on about two or three boxes of crackers all at once, and it was really loud. I said, "What is that?" I started turning around. It hit me in the shoulder, and I was paralyzed. I couldn't move. And then I tried to move again, and when I did, they really paralyzed me. They put me the rest of the way stiff. I was just, you know, I was just out of it. I couldn't move except for my eyes. Again, except for my eyes, I could move my eyes and I can look at the door. All of a sudden, I heard my sister's voice talking down the hallway. And she said, come on, Dave, you can do it. Come on, you can do it. I said, do what, sissy? That's what I called her. But the crazy part about that, she was dead 4 years before that event. And that was kind of like a ghost talking to me, like coming through dimensions, just like I was saying earlier. And then I felt something in my left hand that was up against the headboard, and I could move my tips with my fingers. They allowed me to move certain things that they wanted me to move. So I felt this baby's hand, in my fingers, and I pulled down on the fingers, and it was alive. It felt like it was alive, and I felt the palm. It was just a little baby, probably only about a couple of months old. And I thought, oh my God, what is this? And then I felt something heavy set by me, by my hip area. The bed went down, and that's when I was scared. I didn't know what was coming next, and then I yelled out, oh God, help me. And as soon as I said that, a few seconds later, it was all gone.
Oh, wow. Maybe you they got say help.
They say that they don't mess with our soul. They really can't.
Oh.
The spiritual beings of the universe, in which could be, you can call them angels or gods, you know, army or whatever, but they have this law, the universes, many universes, and God is the center of all that. It's they cannot mess with our souls. That's why they mess with our DNA of our bodies. We're actually a memory bank to them. 80% of our DNA, scientists can't figure out what it is or what it's all about. But the ETs know what it is. They can tap into you and find out your past lives, and they can find out past people that they were involved with. Maybe that's why they're contacting me, because I have DNA from me, from other past people that they knew, humans that they knew of in the past that they were running experiments on. So they're keeping track of how the human race is moving just by checking our DNA. And they don't need implants. A lot of times, a lot of people say, well, they put implants to follow you. No, the carbon-based implants, which I had in my leg, that was to melt into your nervous system and follow the neurons. They actually look like little ugly octopi neurons, what it looked like when I saw it in the microscope. And it's actually to go into your system and start clinging to your DNA and changing it, manipulating your DNA. Now, the metal ones they find in you, that is a radio frequency in which travels your nerve endings, and they also can change your body in frequencies. The world is nothing, and the universe is nothing but frequencies. We are
right.
Light frequencies. Yeah, it's just frequencies is a key word. But that's what about implants. Daryl Sims, I talked to him about that one time, and him and I talked a few times, and he's got a collection of all that. But
now, you said a lot of your implants were biological, so it's not yes. like they put a chip in you. And you took, no. you've actually took some of them out.
Yes, two of them.
Yeah, and then they eventually just disintegrated.
Right. I have pictures of the one, but not the one when I was 14. I had one of my left testicle that I took out, and that was strange. My mom, she had to back off then, because it was about a week or 2 weeks after we saw that flying saucer, my buddy and I, and I felt something in my left testicle. And I was 14. I was curious. And I looked down. I saw a red line, a red streak line, like a laser cut. I didn't know what was a laser cut at that time, but it was a red line. So I took this little lump that I felt, and I start pushing it out of that red line. How I knew to do that, I don't know. I was probably directed to by maybe a good ET instead of a bad ET, I don't know. But I pushed it out, finally got it out of that red line. There was no blood, did not bleed. I got it in my hand. It looked like a little Advil tablet, except it was really ash color, light right. color. And then it started turning darker as I held it out in the oxygen. I went and showed my mom. And she said, where'd you get that? I said, Mom, my testicle. I had other words for it when I was a kid,
right.
But she said, oh, that's just an ingrown hair. Just throw that away. I said, no, Mom, it's not. I said, there was a red line cut for it to come back out. I said, something cut a line and put it in there. And I said, I took it out through that same red line. And then she was dumbfounded. She didn't know what to say. She looked at me, turned her head, was thinking, and she goes, throw it away anyway.
Yeah.
I guess she was afraid of it. So
there's so much information in your book. I mean, we could probably talk for 2 hours sure. on this.
I've talked 4 hours on it.
Yeah, yeah, and you have a lot of family validation. Your mother was involved right. with it. Your brothers had witnessed stuff. Your neighbors helped validate it. So right. you had a lot of validation through different things. You say there's two different types. You mentioned it. Extraterrestrial and dimensional entities, two different types that you dealt with.
Right.
But we got to end the show. I had a final thought, and that was, I like to ask Brandon and get involved too. Do you think we'll ever have E.T. for president?
No, I just wrote an article for the local paper, and this New Jersey casino, this statistician said that we would have a war with the ETs within a matter of months. And she asked me, this reporter from the paper, asked me to respond to it because she knew about my books and about my research. So I responded to it. I said, no, the ETs are not going to attack us. If they would have, they would have attacked us when we bombed Nagasaki and Hiroshima, because they don't like our nuclear bombs.
Right.
Number two, I said, it's more like a false flag, and it's going to be the elites and the cabal that's going to start a new world order and enslaving us even more than we are now.
So we're never going to elect the ET for president?
Not in my lifetime.
Okay, not in your lifetime. Brandon, what do you think? ET for president?
Usually you got to be like a U.S. citizen if you're going to have an actual election. But if they have the ability to shapeshift, who's to say we haven't already had one?
Right.
Or it's some kind of a hybrid.
Double.
Brandon, you know, there's only three qualifications. You have to be at least 35 years old. You have to be a natural-born citizen, and you must have lived in the United States for 14 years. If those are the only requirements, anybody could be president. But right. I don't know. It's just something I threw out there.
Well, Dave, if an ET is going to be president, they're going to be president because of the power and the technology they got. They'll just take over, okay? They'll just say, I'm president. A reptilian will stand up in the White House and say, I'm president. What are you going to do about it?
I think president might not be a high enough position for them anyway.
I think they'd be taking a different title at that point.
Right. Dave, you got any upcoming stuff you want to mention real quick?
Well, yeah, I'm working on this new book, an sci-fi book, and I'm doing my shows. I mentioned two of the shows next week. I got more shows after that. But I'm also planning on doing more writing, of course, that keeps me really busy. I'm behind in my writing, actually, a little bit, because I've been doing some network stuff, preparing production and everything, except it all fell through because the equipment's faulty. But I just want to make a comment. We have a lot of talking heads out there, okay? We have Dolan, we have, you know, all these other people, and George Knapp, Daryl Sims, and these people. What they do is they take stories from experiencers and they talk about them. They go to these conventions and things of that nature. You guys know about the conventions, the ghost conventions too.
Yeah, yeah.
But these people take this information and they talk about the experiencers. Well, the experiencer doesn't get anything from it. Here's what I've been hearing lately, and I don't like it. I have an agenda on my shows to bring this up every once in a while. The talking heads are actually saying now, and I just heard George Knapp say it, or heard some lady on a UFO show last week say something about it. They're saying that they can only believe credible people, and those credible people are only military, cops, airline pilots, and Navy flyers or Air Force flyers. And they said those are the people who are credible. The rest of the people aren't credible. I thought to myself, you a-holes.
Yeah.
This really hurts me, and and that's why they don't want to talk to me, because I know quite a bit about this stuff, and they don't want to. I talk to a lot of them, but what they're doing is this is called a disclosure and called the military. They want to make the normal person on the street be liars, or they make up things. And I'm thinking that really hurts.
Do you ever lecture at any of these places?
I did some small lectures back in 2011, 2012 at a UFO meetings and stuff like that, but nothing big, no.
Okay. Well, I got to skip some of the stuff and move right to our inspirational thought, because we're over time. And for you, I try to make this important to the guest, and it's about courage, because I think you need that. I think you've demonstrated that by writing these books. Mm-hmm. Courage doesn't mean you don't get afraid. Courage means you don't let fear stop you. So I don't think you've let fear slow you down one bit. You've got the three books out. In March of 2022, you wrote They. In August of 2022, you came out with The Senseless Wars and Conflicts. And in April of this year, you came out with Angels and Supernatural Entities. I think that's great. I love that you've had the courage to come forward and share this information with us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks so much, Dave. Brandon, thanks. Good to see you again.
Yeah.
Peace out, everybody.
Bye. Thank you.
The opinions expressed in the preceding program are those of the producer and not necessarily those of WKTV Community Media.